Okay, hour two, welcome back. It really is unsettling. I just was sent another picture of a little Palestinian child with half of her head gone, and her father was trying to reach down to clutch her, and people were trying to pull him back. I can't post that picture. I didn't want to see it. I can't unsee it. This happens all the time over there. What's being done to the Palestinian people is one of the gravest crimes against humanity ever, ever. And to laugh about it, and if you really, honestly still support Israel and its policies, that's your right. But you're missing parts too. It couldn't be any more horrific. It just couldn't, what's going on. And you're paying for it. Americans are paying for it. Our jets, our bombs, our guns, our bullets, you name it. We're buying it, supporting Israel. And they don't give a damn about human life. Go back to John Kennedy. Look how they did it. Broad daylight. No question. Mitchell Henderson is back with us tonight to talk about these things, the Memo of Understanding, which has a 60-day fuse on it. Trump was so desperate, I'm going to repeat this. I'll bet he was begging behind the scenes. What do you want? What do you want? And the rumors are that not only will 20 plus billion in frozen Iranian assets be thawed out and released, but we, the American people, are apparently going to pay up to 300 billion in war reparations to Iran, if that story is true. I don't know. I'm going to make sure I don't know. And you understand that. I'm just passing it along. There's so much to this. American jets, F-35Is. What is the I for? Israel. F-35I. And they get our jets and they make them better. How much do they pay for those jets? Zero. They don't pay for anything. It's the biggest parasitic relationship on a geopolitical basis I have ever seen, and Americans do not understand it. Hello, Mitchell. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned the F-35I, because this is very illustrative of what one of our problems with Israel is. So the F-35I is a model built just for Israel. And what it is it has better avionics and electronic warfare stuff than what we sell to other countries, to our other allies, okay? Because we ideally don't want our best to get out. Now the Israelis complain that the F-35I doesn't have our state-of-the-art electronic warfare and sensors and stuff in it like they would want. But we don't give them to Israel because every technology, military technology we have ever given to Israel, Israel has sold to China.
China? God.
Yeah, to China.
That's right.
They have sold every
yeah.
advance in military technology
yep.
that we give to Israel, they sell. We give to Israel, they sell to China. Okay, so we really don't want to do it, except now we do. There's many bills passing through Congress to actually merge the IDF and the U.S. military, you know, military
If that is allowed to happen,
yes.
That is the end of America. That will be the end, because the Constitution will effectively be dead and gone if that happens.
Well, yes, and you know they're moving bills through Congress to pay IDF soldiers VA benefits for Americans, people that serve America.
I couldn't believe it.
Also, they want to get, like, if you're an American and you go join the Israeli army, fight for this foreign country, they want to cover you under the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act. And that act is like if you're in the National Guard or you get drafted and sent off to war, when you come back, you have to whoever you had a job with has to give you your job back. They suspend your mortgage payments. I mean, nobody can like seize your house or nothing like that while you're gone. That's the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act, and that's what they want to extend to IDF soldiers. Okay, this is
wow.
It's horrific. Wow. Okay, they also want to share the intelligence, like Mossad and CIA basically will become one. So I need to remind people.
For a reasonable person to honestly assess the situation now, that's pretty close to the fact of the matter already. But please, yes, go ahead.
Yeah.
They're just formalizing.
So I need to remind everybody of the issue of the Liberty, okay? What happened in the Liberty? This is like we are such good friends with Israel. We can trust Israel with everything. So let me tell you what happened. Prior to the 67 war, an American spy had sold, Navy trader, had sold our naval codes to the Soviet Union. But America did not know about it, okay? Well, Israeli intelligence, Mossad, found out that the Soviets had our codes, all our naval codes. They could decipher everything we were saying. And the Israelis knew this, okay? So they never said anything to the United States, okay? They're such good allies and friends that they did not tell us that the Russians had penetrated our code. They let us just go along talking in the open air, and the Russians could understand everything we were saying, okay? So what happened is, in the 67 war, the Israelis wanted to launch an attack in Syria, okay, a surprise attack. It is very important that it be a surprise attack. But the Liberty, it was an intelligence gathering ship that did communication signals intelligence, and they could hear Israeli communications. And they knew that we could decipher their communications. So they was afraid that the USS Liberty was picking up Israeli communications about attacking Syria. We were afraid that the Liberty would send that information back to fleet. The Soviets would pick that information up and give that to the Syrians, which is why the Israelis intentionally attacked the Liberty and killed a bunch of our troops.
Okay. I've never 34 dead, 170 some wounded. I never heard that before. Yeah. Thank you for that. That's fascinating. Makes perfect sense.
So, remember,
it was broad daylight. The American flag was flying high above the Liberty.
Sure.
No question about it. None whatsoever.
So most people think, well, it's not. It's just about them attacking the Liberty. But it's much worse than that. They were supposed to be our friends and allies, and they did not inform. They found out that the Soviets had penetrated our naval communications, and they did not inform us of that. Okay? So, they had agents in the Soviet Union. They had lots of agents in the Soviet Union, and they didn't want to burn their agents. So the agent in the Soviet Union that told the Israelis that the Soviets had the American code, well, they didn't want to mess up his position or anything, so they did not tell the United States about it in order to save their man on the inside. Okay, so it's just the way espionage works. But I mean, that shows you what kind of friend they are. They're not a friend at all. Okay, not in any way are they a friend. Okay, that was a double stab in the back that they did on the Liberty. It wasn't just a single straightforward thing. A double thing, this is a big problem. But what I wanted to talk to about tonight is I kind of wanted to let you know that which way things have to go and what things are likely to happen. Okay, first of all, when you listen to all these peace things and stuff, it's not a peace treaty. It's a memorandum of understanding.
It's a memo
for a
goodness
ceasefire.
Sake. That's
right,
all.
Right. It's just a ceasefire. Okay. When Trump he calls a ceasefire a treaty. Okay. Let me tell you what a treaty. Let me define a treaty for you. A treaty is between two warring countries that will make a treaty to settle all issues so that there's no reason for future fighting. Okay, it is a solution to the problem, is what it is. Okay, so then you have below a treaty, you have a ceasefire. A ceasefire does not solve any issues between the two belligerents. It's just you're going to stop shooting. Okay, so. So, like, we had a treaty with Japan to end the war, okay? It was a complete surrender, whatever, okay? But that was a treaty, okay? Then we had, in the Korean War, what did we have in the Korean War? We don't have a peace treaty with North Korea. We have an armistice. That is a ceasefire. So technically, North and South Korea are still at war today. It's just that they're in an armistice, they're in a ceasefire. Okay. Now that ceasefire is pretty much a ceasefire. I mean, most of the time it's a ceasefire. But you know, I spent a couple of years over there in the army, and well, they will shoot at you. Okay. So it's you know, it's not like a rock solid ceasefire, but it's put it this way: they do little attacks, but they don't break up into open hostilities and stuff. Like when I was there, they would send infiltrators down to kill a bunch of South Koreans, blow some things up, stuff like that, plant landmines for U.S. soldiers to step on. I mean, you know, it's still
nobody knows these things. It's important.
Yeah, it's not like open fighting necessarily. Right. There was, I think it was 73, there was a six-hour firefight, field artillery firefight at Chorwan that went for 6 hours straight, this continuous battery of artillery going back and forth. Now, we recognize the time between 1967 and 1974, that time was considered a time of, they call it the Twilight War or the Little Korean War, because there was a lot of shooting back and forth at that time. If you served in Korea at that time, that you earned a Armed Forces Expeditionary Service medal. For if you were there from 67 to 74. And that's okay. Because there was, you only get that expeditionary medal if there's hostile activity going on. So it was recognized. Then after that ended in 74, but in 76, some North Korean soldiers attacked this guard post that they were trying to chop a tree down, and the Korean soldiers went up and murdered the American guys at the guard post and stuff. So even after this little war went down, the Twilight War was over, they still occasionally have attacks and stuff. So it's still a very dangerous place to be, you know. You never know when something's going to break out. At any rate, that is still more of a ceasefire. What Trump calls a ceasefire is not even a ceasefire. You'll notice during these ceasefires,
it's just a verbal declaration.
Shoot at each other.
That's all it is.
Yeah, we still shoot at each other.
And they digitally signed it. Big deal, huh? Big deal.
Right. So this is just Trump. You know, he is worried about November and high gas prices and stuff. Even though he's such an idiot, he gets up there and tells the American people, "Oh, I'm not worried about inflation. I like inflation." Well, that's not what he ran on. You know, he didn't run on inflation. You know, and he said, "Oh, higher gas prices are good for America because we sell lots of gas." Well, it's not good for the American people because we got to pay a lot more money for gas. You know, so I mean, this guy doesn't live in reality. You know, and everything he says, he lives in a fantasy world, and he expects us to live in his fantasy world with him. And I got to admit, you know, the markets believe him. How could you believe this guy? 39 times he says, "Oh, we're on the verge of signing a peace treaty."
39 times.
And the markets respond to that. 39 times.
He's making money. You know he's making money.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing is, you know, that both the Russians and the Iranians are getting tired of Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner because every time they go to negotiate, they're also trying to negotiate side deals that they profit from personally. Okay, so
thanks for mentioning that.
Thing is.
Mitch, it is so despicable, the quality and caliber of people we're putting up to represent this country. Not we aren't. Trump is. They're just scum, garbage, dirtbag gougers.
They're Jewish Zionist scum that we're sending to 100%. Negotiate for our country.
Yeah. They represent the United States of America, the Constitution, our founding fathers, our values as a nation
Israel.
State. No, of course they do. And themselves.
So to understand where things are going, you have to let me get into a little bit of history. So in up until 1914, we could have decision in wars. Even the Civil War, even the Crimean War, no matter what war, no matter what complaints that people had about the war, those wars were ended somehow decisively. Like the Boxer Rebellion in China, the Allies went in, they decisively defeated the Boxers. They decisively defeated the guerrillas in the Philippine insurrection, in the Balkan Wars, and the Moroccan crisis. There's always military force applied that came to a decision or created a decision by strategy or by military technology or something. But force, we got a decision. Okay, then that's what you want in a war. You want a decision. You want human to have a victory. A protracted war is very bad for any country. Sun Tzu said this millennium ago. Okay, protracted war just runs the country's economy in the ground. That's what we had in Afghanistan, global war and terrorism. That's all protracted war. It hurts us. World War II did not hurt us. We did right, but that was not a protracted war. That was a decisive war. Korean War, that's getting into a protracted war. There was no decision in the Korean War. Okay, Vietnam War, no decision. That was a 10-year war that did not have a decision, and it threw us into long-term inflation and issues like that, okay? The Gulf War in 1990, that was a decisive war. It did not run us into the ground. Okay? It did not hurt our economy. Grenada, Panama, very quick, very decisive, did not cause a ripple in our economy. Okay, so global war on terrorism, Iraq, Afghanistan, devastating to our economy. Okay, so as we go along, 1914 comes along, and the armies activate, mobilize, and the Germans invade France and so forth. But technology had changed. What had changed specifically is the machine gun and hydraulic artillery. Okay, the machine gun and hydraulic artillery is just that in the old artillery pieces, after you fire, you have to reset the gun back into position to fire again. And with hydraulics, this is a revolution in artillery technology, because now you could place the gun and shoot multiple rounds, shoot a bunch of rounds through there without having to reposition the gun, which takes time, okay? So this is what caused trench warfare, okay? So let's go along. Now we've come to another thing in between Russia and Ukraine. That has turned into trench warfare because now we have Cornet or Javelin missiles that can take out tanks. We have anti-ship missiles that can take out hypersonic anti-ship missiles that can take out aircraft carriers. So now we cannot really mass our troops or either our ground forces or our navies. We can't really mass them because ISR, which is modern intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, it's transparent. You can see everything. You can't hide anything. You cannot mass troops. You cannot make it.
Mitch, if I may, is that not a tenet, a baseline bedrock foundation of military strategy for 3,000 years?
Yes.
It's gone.
So it's just gone, like that. Yes, so now we're back at trench warfare in Ukraine. And actually, we're at trench warfare in Iran too. But you just draw back and look at it from the point of view that the trench warfare in Ukraine is on the ground and involves ground troops. ground forces, armor forces. Russia really couldn't mass a bunch of tanks because the drones and the ISR plus the drones and stuff can just break them up very easy. Okay, so it changes the nature of war. Okay, so in Iran, that's a trench war, but the trench is not involving ground troops. It's involving navies and air forces. But it's a trench war, okay, because there's no decision. So they can't have a decision in Ukraine. They cannot have a decision in Iran. It's over. There is no decision. You can't do it anymore. A relatively small country can use modern technology to effectively defend itself. As a matter of fact, the Economist, which is a British news magazine, and I'm not recommending it or anything, but they at the last issue was the title is The New Shape of War, and they write a nice like 4-page essay on modern warfare, and they're explaining that there's no decision in war anymore. You can't come to a decision, okay? Because these modern technologies kind of outdo each other. So
what they're saying is that that wars are no longer actually winnable in the traditional common sense of the term? Not easily, anyway.
No, they're not winnable. They're not winnable. No. And you see, you always have action counteraction. For example, so the Ukrainians swarm a bunch of drones on the Russians. Well, the Russians have very good electronic warfare, so they can interrupt the signals and stuff. So then they try to adapt by putting fiber optic cable running to the drones. But let me tell you, that solves the electronic warfare problem. But I've dealt with wire-guided stuff a lot in the military, and it always gets tangled up in the bushes, okay? So it's not an efficient thing. So something else has come about, and the Chinese are on the cutting edge of this, as is Turkey, actually, and that is drones that, instead of wire-guiding them or instead of electronically guiding them, you make them autonomous, where they can go seek out targets and attack it by themselves by using AI instead of trying to having command and control. You just turn them loose, and they can. The Chinese have it so that they not just have autonomous drones; they have autonomous drone swarms. They just tell it what it's hunting for. They turn it loose. Then it doesn't matter if we have electronic warfare to interfere with the drones, because the drones aren't tethered to a command and control anywhere. They're autonomous, right? So this makes warfare very 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 different. And they've known about this. You know, there's three people that I think that are kind of good in understanding how this warfare goes. Douglas McGregor, Daniel Davis, okay, and John Antal. He's a retired lieutenant colonel, but he writes the books about the modern weapons and stuff. He wrote the book. He's kind of written the book on like Nagorno-Karabakh and how drones were used against defensive systems and stuff. Effectively, very good defensive systems were able to be penetrated and stuff. So what these three guys have in common is they are all retired armor officers, okay? So I understand their thinking, and I understand their education, because I had that education, okay, because I did that job, okay? So they went to their armor cavalry basic course, their armor advanced course, their combined armored and services staff school. Okay, so this gives them strategic vision and stuff. Okay, I want you to know that Pete Hegseth, although he went to a infantry basic and advanced course, he never went to the combined arms and staff school or command and general staff guards, and that's where you learn about operational art. And if you don't understand operational art, you're just not going to understand strategy. Okay, so he has Hegseth has no strategic vision. He's not a strategist.
How unimpressed with Hegseth are you?
Well, listen, as far as running the defense
the bureaucracy
and the troops, he's essential. He's essential. If we didn't have him in there, our military mm-hmm. would be just totally worthless. Okay, so what he's doing the right things as far as encouraging actual leadership and meritocracy, which we had gotten away from. There's no leadership in the Army. He is bringing the leadership back. Okay, so that's good. But his mind is at the tactical level, and it's not totally bad because. If you have a guy who doesn't understand the tactical level, he doesn't understand how the troops need to be trained and how they need to be managed and stuff. Okay, leadership is not being a boss; it's a very different thing. Okay, so it's putting the troops first. See, he can do that. Some political hack or general will not put the troops first. Okay, they're not the first consideration. So it's politics instead of.
So there's something competent about Hegseth, something that is not a comedy of errors. He is somewhat competent.
Nobody else could have done what he did. There's nobody else who could have done what he did. Because, see, he's the same thing that makes him look like a buffoon is the mm-hmm. same thing that allows him to do what needs to be done. Okay. Mm. So, to put it that way, it's like putting a bowl in a china shop, okay? But the shop needed to be rearranged. Let's put it that way, okay?
You know, Mitch, going back to the idea, and you covered this in your last visit, that war mm-hmm. has been irrevocably, permanently, radically changed from now on. It has been. And one of the key aspects is drones, period. Now they have drones that can be sent around anywhere, hang outside a window from 100 meters away, and shoot somebody dead mm-hmm. at a table sitting inside a building, an office, a room, whatever.
Sure.
They can individually take out anybody, anywhere. If they get a fix on them, they've got drones that can shoot deadly accurately. So that's another angle. Not to mention the heavy armor issue. Go ahead.
Well, see, that in itself is one advancement. But then add to that the AI making it autonomous. In other words, to shoot somebody from a drone hanging out the window, you have to have a command and control tethered back to somebody that's operating the drone.
Not now. It's called loitering.
If you program the drone to hunt out certain people and just autonomously do it without getting permission, or being told to fire, to just autonomously do it, that's even better. That makes it totally unmanageable for the enemy, okay? So the point that I want to get to with all this is that there's nothing conventionally that can be done that will bring a decision to a war. So there's only one option to have decisiveness in war, and that's the nuclear option. Only nuclear weapons can cause a decision in the Iran war.
Which as far as we know, Trump went for that option. He demanded the nuclear codes and was told no by General Dan Kane, JCS chief. That's a big story that never got much play. Big story.
No, that's right. So what's going to have to happen is the nuclear option, okay? That's the only way to get Israel. Israel is in the fight of its life. Israel sees an existential threat here. If they lose America, they have lost their country, okay? If they lose American support, if America doesn't do what they say, they have lost their country. They cannot afford to have this peace in Iran. Israel cannot do that, okay? Because they have to get rid of Iran so they can move on to Turkey. Get us into a war against our ally, Turkey, right?
Got it.
This is what maniacs these people are, okay? So what I predict, there's many different possibilities. I think with this so-called peace treaty, Trump may have signed his and J.D. Vance's death sentence with this. Okay. I think Israel may kill them.
Okay. Well, they want Mike because Johnson, number three. He goes right to the Oval Office.
Yes, sure. So yeah. Trump isn't crazy. I mean, Vance is more against this war in Iran than Trump is. Okay, Vance didn't really like this war in Iran. So and he's Roman Catholic. Okay, he may be pro-Israel, but it's not his core belief in religion, and certainly it's not Trump's core belief in religion. For Trump, this is not a religious issue; it's a money issue. Okay, Israel has made him president and controls his presidency. They just had primaries, which Israel paid for all the people who opposed Trump to be defeated. They poured more money into these primaries than they've ever thrown into any primary in America.
$30 million against Massey alone.
Yes. $30 million. Yes. Yes.
To get
exactly.
Him out.
So Israel wants results for its money, and the guy who will give that to them is Mike Johnson, because he is a Christian Zionist. In other words, Mike Johnson believes that Israel is his God, Israel is Christ. Okay, Israel is who he worships. So that's his God, and he will do anything Israel tells him to do. Okay, so I think they would like to have him as the president.
Yeah. Okay, and let me state the obvious. I won't even ask a question. It's clear that this very topic has certainly taken up a great deal of discussion at probably all levels in Israel, especially at the high levels of government. How do we get Johnson in there? Believe it. They're burning the midnight oil talking about this kind of thing probably right now. I'm not joking.
Well, then another thing that they need to do, okay, now, if you remember way back in last November, I was saying this. I was saying Israel's going to have to do a false flag in the United States, something catastrophic that will sway America back to Israel's side. It has to be something. It can't be like some people say, oh, well, they'll kill the president and then blame it on the Iranians, and then that will bring the American people back to their side. I don't think that's quite enough to bring the American people back to Israel's side, okay? There's 70% of Americans detest Israel. And this, in order to get those people back on board with Israel, Israel is going to have to do a massive and catastrophic false flag attack, and the problem is even if they cover their tracks very good, probably the majority of the American people are still going to think that it was Israel that did the false flag.
So, of course.
But they're going to do it.
No,
anyway.
The American people, generally speaking, are going to figure it out. They won't be able to prove it, but they'll intuitively figure it out. And I think you're right.
What would do it?
How about this? How about that? Well, Ed, I'd like to hear your thoughts, but my take is we'll call it a tactical nuke on a moderate-sized American city of no particular military or political value that can be taken down, damaged severely, but not destroyed, with a tactical nuke. That would be the kind of thing, shock value. Think of 9/11. It's got to be much bigger than that. What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually think that in order to be a credible false flag, I think they're going to have to attack New York City or Washington D.C. I think it'll be New York City. I think they're going to have to do that because if they do an unimportant place, everybody's going to it's game up. Everybody's going to know Israel did it.
Well, your point is correct.
That's a false flag if they bomb someplace insignificant. So Israel's going to have to go all the way and bomb someplace that is significant, that does massive damage kills millions of American people, I think that's what they're going to resort to. And I think they may kill the president and resort to a false flag at the same time. Okay, so then this could be the predicate that Israel used to nuke Iran, okay? I want to give you another...
They'll get even, in other words, what you're saying is they would get even for us.
For us.
They're American brethren. Well, we're going to get this. We're going to even the score for you.
They're our friends. Right, exactly. So, I mean, it's a typical mafia movie, you know. Oh, you know, so-and-so whacked the big tuna, you know. So we killed their guys that whacked the big tuna. We're your good buddies and stuff, you know. I mean, it's old. It's, you know, it's old. It's predictable.
There are a lot of Americans who are not well-informed and actually do think Iran is the big villain. Now, as an example, I saw a story earlier that there were protests in Los Angeles as the Iranian soccer team arrived for the World Cup match. So people were out. Could have been well organized and paid for by Israel. Who knows? But there was a demonstration in L.A. Yeah.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, it's probably so. So here's another aspect that I want to do. So I was in tactical nuclear forces in Korea back in the early 70s. And what our plan was there is, as the North Koreans kept sweeping south, this is a very mountainous country, so they're going to come down these valleys. So we had nuclear weapons that we were going to just... Tactical nukes, we're just going to blow up those valleys as the troops came down and just wipe them out on the way down. So it was a very defensive mindset. At the same time, I'm studying Soviet, you know, because it's my job to study Soviet nuclear tactics and stuff. The Soviets, you know, typically in a conventional war, when you're going to attack the enemy, what you do is you do preparatory fires on the enemy positions, okay? And then you do, as you're moving towards the enemy, you do a suppressive fire, artillery fire, and that's to keep the enemy's heads down as you're coming onto their position. And when you're coming right onto their position, they keep firing, but they shift off of the position to make it seem like they're still firing, but they're shifting off the position so that your troops can move in and take over the, you know, the enemy position and stuff. Well, the Soviets, what they did is they went a step further and said they practiced. They actually did field exercises where they would use tactical nuclear weapons for their preparatory fires. In other words, they would use nukes to hit enemy positions before the troops would move in. And then you obviously can't do suppressive fires or shift fire with nukes because, well, people can't stand that much force of radiation. So the corollary of that nowadays would be that besides these nukes hitting the enemy targets on the ground, the preparatory fires, you would use a large EMP weapon to knock out all enemy communications and stuff like that. So that would be your suppressive fire, the equivalent of a suppressive fire. So, anyways, maybe there's still going to be an American ground invasion on because Israel will do a nuclear suppressive fire or nuclear preparatory fires before the U.S. troops go in, because conventionally a ground invasion will not work in Iran. But the only way that you can really change anything in Iran is with a ground invasion. So the nuclear
Trump was talking about Karg Island. That's off the table now with this agreement, supposedly. Although you can't try. I'm just trying to think of what Trump would do if the word came down from his buddies in Tel Aviv, you better knock it off, Don, if you want to see 81. You made it to 80. Whatever.
Well,
however they'll say it.
It's getting back to that thing. Remember I was talking once before about this movie called The Second Civil War? is a 1997 movie and stuff. Yeah. And they were going to they says, okay, we're going to give them a 72 hour ultimatum, and they have to do something by then. But then the White House staff said, oh no, that's when the soap opera has its final the series finale. You can't possibly make the attack then. And he has to roll it back to 60 hours so that it'll happen, so that it won't take away from the series finale, right? And so we have the World Cup soccer going on, and for a solid week or so, and then we have the big 4th of July American birthday party, and this is something that's very dear to Trump's heart because he's a showman, you know. He wants to put on the greatest, the best show ever during this time. I think he lacks foresight and he lacks vision, which you can tell. The fact that he attacked Iran shows he has no foresight, no vision. But he sees far enough ahead.
He's stupid.
Like, what's on his schedule? Yeah. What's on his schedule? Like, oh, well, I need this time. I don't need any distractions. So I think really what this whole, quote, peace treaty is about is putting things off until he has his big shows for America and stuff, you know.
I guess.
And then I think he'll do something, okay? So his life depends on doing something. I mean, you know, he's got to face the American electorate in November, but before that he has to face the Israelis, and the Israelis will just kill him if he doesn't do what they want him to do.
He certainly realizes that. He knows. He understands what he's playing with. He's playing with fire.
Right.
Terminal fire.
Yeah.
Fire. And
right.
He's... I don't know. He really put himself in the corner by groveling to Israel. This all goes back to that. If he were his own man, at least even 50% his own man, we'd have a different world right now. And no, he's not. So he put himself in.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know this. Here's another one. I got to throw this out.
Yeah.
Our vaunted F-35 fighters, and I'll again mention. I think that in Jordan we may have lost dozens of F-35s, F-15s, F-16s when those 12 Iranian missiles came down and smacked that base big time, big time. We'll never hear about it. No one will admit it. And you're under a penalty of probably 40 years in the brig if you let loose anything about it, if you're in the military. So no one's talking. No one is saying a word about that except, no, there was no damage. Nothing happened. I don't believe it. In any case, our F-35s, what do they cost each? $200 million? $250 million? I don't know. Something like that.
Uh-huh.
Only one in four, 25% of all of our F-35s, are ready and able for mission work right now. That's it. One out of four. They're all broken down, the rest of them. Parts missing. Parts on order. 25%.
Also,
that's all
they're not that great of a jet. I mean, there's a lot of countries that just won't even buy them. You know, I mean, we
that's
say,
true.
Oh, they're the best, most modern thing. But there's countries that say, no, they're crap, and we don't want to buy them, you know. I mean, I talk to Air Force people all the time, and Air Force people are the people who have to deal with them every day. They think they're substandard. We got sold a bill of goods. They don't like
it. We did. No, it's not a fighter. It's not air superiority. It's not air superiority. It's not a bomber. They tried to do everything with it, and it was just a total waste.
No,
they call it
this modular
Fat Amy.
Idea,
that's what the pilots call it. Fat Amy.
Yeah.
It's a big fat.
So you really have to watch what they're saying. So I saw this report. This is really a cool thing. So do you remember when the North Korean troops went to Kursk? What did the Ukrainians say about them? And what did the media say about the North Korean troops that were fighting in Russia?
The Ukrainians.
Do you remember?
Yeah, the Ukrainians mocked them. And I forget how the media played it, but the Ukrainians mocked them, and they were laughing because they were easy to kill for some reason. They were not prepped for this kind of war.
That's what the American press said also. Okay, I remember at the time, everybody said, oh, these are subpar troops, they're no good, blah, 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 okay? So, so we, you know, the Defense Intelligence Agency, they put out reports about foreign militaries. And these are not propaganda reports, Jeff. These are the truth. Because you can't lie, you know, you can't be telling our troops, oh, yeah, these are a bunch of worthless soldiers when they might be good soldiers. Because if we underestimate them, it's going to be a problem for us. So the soldiers get told the truth about it. So a DA, a Defense Intelligence Agency report on a foreign army is as accurate as can be. It's not a propaganda piece. This is information that people need. Well, where did they get the information? Where did the DIA get the information for this report? Well, it got the report. It got actual assessments from Ukrainian troops on the ground, okay, and it got actual reports from Russian troops, okay, and the DIA report on the North Korean troops say they're kick-ass. They're very, very good soldiers, very well-trained.
So the mocking and the put-down was just more psyops.
Propaganda.
Yeah.
Propaganda. They're good troops. They're very well very, very well-trained soldiers. They're trained to the degree that they're trained like their infantrymen would be trained like one of our
special forces
guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would be trained like a tier one soldier. They're trained. What they're trained to do is if they are behind the lines, if they get cut off from their forces, and there's one man alone. He's supposed to be a one-man army attacking our troops, understanding demolition, sabotage, you know, just everything, okay? I mean, they're very well trained. They're not crappy soldiers. They're good soldiers. And this is what the DIA says, and the DIA says this is what the Ukrainian army actually says. And when the Ukrainian army is disseminating information about the North Koreans to other Ukrainian units that have to come in contact with them, they tell them the truth. They're not just mocking them and making fun of them. That's a propaganda thing meant for the public. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Kim has changed. He called his Congress together and changed his nuclear posture. That if something, if he gets assassinated or he gets kidnapped, they're to launch a nuclear war on Japan, the United States, Korea.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah. So they have missiles that can hit the Western U.S. easily now.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they can, the thing is, see, they watch, Kim watches us. Oh, we kidnap this guy. We killed Ayatollah. So he changes his nuclear posture to account for what America actually does. Do you think he's being paranoid, or do you think he's being prudent and realistic? I think he's being prudent and realistic.
I would agree.
You prepare for what the Army actually does. Okay, not what you think they do, but what does the American Army actually do? We kill the Ayatollah, which is like the Pope of Iran. They kill Maduro. They kidnap Maduro. So he just says, okay, if I get kidnapped or I get killed, boom.
I read it.
It's on.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think it makes perfect sense. I wouldn't underestimate Kim or his military for one microsecond. They're very highly disciplined.
Foolish too.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, I concur.
So people, we're marching on. Get my book, The Final Wars, How to Survive, The Coming Civil War, World War III, and the Collapse of Civilization, because it's coming on, okay? Coming on quickly, and almost everything you see in the press now is a lie. It's
don't
all
forget
lies.
That
it's all fiction.
Everybody.
They've created a fictional world for you to live in. Okay, and it's fantasy.
This memorandum of understanding means virtually nothing.
Nothing.
Don't hold your breath. All right, thank you, Mitchell.
Memorandum of understanding.
Yeah.
The memorandum of understanding, Jeff, is to affect markets.
Oil prices down, right? stocks up.
That's all it's
and,
about.
Trump and his cronies make more money. That's what is going on.
Sure.
All right.
Okay,
thank you, Mitch.
Good being back with you tonight.
Okay, sir. Yeah, really good. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay,
Mitchell Henderson, the one and only, and he is a source to be very carefully listened to. We'll be right back. Hold on.